Into the Nexus is a production of amove.tv. Bookmark Amove TV for other great video games and esports podcasts. Into the Nexus is sponsored by listeners like you via patreon.com/ITN. Greetings and welcome back, everyone. This is Into the Nexus, the podcast all about Heroes of the Storm. I'm Garrett Weinzierl, here as always with Kyle Ferguson. Welcome back, dude.
It's good to be back, Garrett.
I think we should make a pact now, Kyle.
Okay, only play Lili and Falstad.
You're damn right, that's exactly what I was going to say. Yes. Yeah. I'm going to let our listeners in on a little secret. So when we have a pre-show meeting every day before I go off and have East Coast lunch. You're West Coast, so I've always just assumed you eat afterwards. And we try to squeeze a game in. You know, we have a meeting, talk about what the show's going to be, and it's like, all right, let's go play a game. And for the last 3 weeks, sir, since this patch hit, because it made some changes to Lili and Falstad, you and I have been going into quick match with those two heroes, and we haven't lost any of those games.
Yeah, it's going pretty well. Resets are fun on Lightning.
What is?
The resets that you get.
Oh, resets are fun. I missed resets.
Yeah.
It turns out they are. It's kind of the cleanup potential. I guess that's not what's gross, right? It's just the cleanup. So, like, when the potential is achieved, when you're in the conditions for cleanup on Falstad, it's just gross, man. It just it just keeps coming. The thunderstorm is here. I want to start calling it hurricane build. It just doesn't end.
I mean, I guess in that way they've immortalized the classic Heroes of the Storm balance, and that the only thing that stops you is mana. And it's perfectly fine to have heroes like that, though it's definitely a little moldy in some ways. You know, we got a lot of heroes that just keep on going, but you're global, so it's not like the worst thing in the world that you got to go back. I mean, that's like Brightwing Hearthing out and then being like, hey, who wants a big heal, by the way, on my way back in?
You're right. I mean, the mana is the limiting factor, right? But, you know, I don't know. So is this your sly way of telling me you want me to play Falstad or Malfurion instead of Lili?
No, I really like Lili. I like that I have Escape and Mighty Gust and Slows, and I don't really have to take care of you because you're Lili.
Every damn time that Tracer closed in on us today, it was just like, nope, you're Blound. Enjoy.
Yep. Nice use of Blound. I like that.
Oh, yeah, I've got it. I learned it from watching you, Dad.
Well, you got to have a patent. Blinded? Gee, I ain't got time for that. Need a new word. This is the internet, after all. We make our own words.
Yeah. So we got a good show for you today. My segues are going to be horrendous. I don't know what's going on. My sinuses are terrible. And I'm a little choked up as a result of it. So I'm a little foggy in the head. So if I seem even weirder than usual, that's what's going on. But as always, we want to kick off before we get to the meat of the program by thanking our lovely, lovely patrons that are supporting us over at patreon.com/ITN. Thank you for supporting us with your hard earned dollars. I used a few of those to buy Sudafed this week.
It's a work expense.
You're damn right it is. Dude, it has been so long since I haven't been able to breathe through my nose. I forgot how it's terrible, man. It feels like you can't get anything done.
Yeah, a lot of plants there in Florida. I want you dead.
I cannot see my driveway. There's so much oak pollen on it. It looks like, it's what I imagine, you go out and there's like new snow and you're like, my driveway looks so different. Oh, it's snow, except for me, it's plant sex.
Mm-hmm. The pits. Well, you were looking for great segues today, so thank you to those who pollinated our Patreon over at patreon.com/ITN.
Yes. And to our most recent patron, Kevin Hegwood, thank you very much for your support. And also a special shout out this week to not Miles Davis and Christopher Svanberg for raising their pledges Thank you very much. Both of you have been around forever as ITN patrons. So thank you very much, not only for sticking around for so long, but for deciding that we deserved a raise. Thank you to all of our bosses over at Patreon. But now, Kyle, it is time to do what we always do, which is talk about what the hell is going on in the world of Heroes of the Storm.
We're on, boys! Let's liven up this place!
The moment is upon us.
Yes, I'd mana tap that.
So it's time, Kyle, for the full check-in on the balance patch. It's time for our check-ins. We should just start calling these postmortems, because we by this point we know where, like, how the balance patch has affected the game.
I guess that kind of suggests that things are done, and they certainly aren't. I mean, look at Sonya's continued rise to power with Slam build. In fact, there's a lot of Sonyas who are recovering from years and years of spin builds trying to learn this new stuff. So it's not time to knock that down yet, though it is extremely oppressive. It's an ongoing, it's a living, breathing ecosystem, a live game where you affect the outcome.
It's a postmortem being given to you by necromancers. How's that sound?
Okay.
Zul is giving you the postmortem. So it's still the game is still in motion, even if the meta has settled somewhat.
Well, let's push down the lane of that information and siege a tower with knowledge.
You're on fire today. So let's talk about who got buffed. We got we put Mal'Ganis, Artanis, Ragnaros, Malfurion, and Mephisto in the buff category. For most of them, obvious reasons, some of them maybe not as obvious, but we gave these the stamp of you were buffed in the most recent balance patch. And they are all up in win percentage, except for Malfurion, who is, I would argue, not down in a noteworthy fashion. We're talking 0.5%, which there's a margin of error there that I'm more than happy to say that Malfurion is essentially unaffected by his changes in terms of his overall win rate.
Yeah, it's not horrible being down, you know, 0.5%, but it is interesting, particularly when you talk to people who believe that Emerald Dream is just the bee's knees and something that shouldn't be allowed in the game because it's so oppressive and so intense. And yet, with a 48% win rate, it has the lowest, well, lower than Ventral Roots anyway. You know, Deep Roots still kicking around, 44% win rate there, Emerald Dream, 48%. So, probably a lot of curious new Malfurions. It's interesting because our mages who are getting in, like Chromie, are doing so much, much damage that Malfurion can't possibly interact. Whereas old problems used to be those more classic mages like Jaina and Kael'thas, but those aren't seeing as much play anymore compared to something like Chromie and maybe a little Mephisto, but that is such a tight select group that is even interested in running that hero. I kind of just don't even factor him in.
Yeah, which we've gotten into in the past. Like it's nothing personal to Mephisto players. It's just you're a small, dedicated group.
Right. And I think it takes a lot of time to feel rewarded in that trait play style. Chromie, line up, even if you're not particularly good at it, maybe you're using temporal loop, you hit a big, big pile of sand, somebody dies, you go hurrah! Whereas Mephisto, you teleport in, you hit a million people, maybe you reset your cooldowns, and then you're suddenly back in the back line, and you kind of go, what did I do? What did I accomplish? Oh, well, you drained healer mana. You taxed the supports and the tank, and now they have to back, and the Vala has no support, so you can get her that next time. But it's all terribly nuanced.
Yeah. I will say, like, it feels like, and again, I'm still kind of soul searching. I'm not try hard in draft at the moment, so I'm seeing a whole lot of quick match. But I've really felt from this beyond our own personal, like just fun times with our Lili and Falstads is the presence of Ragnaros. Cause I just feel like I was barely ever seeing him before this balance patch. And now I see him multiple times a day.
That is interesting. He did get that little shore up into his talents recently, not only the meatball, but then some talent incentivizations to his build. The reason I included this in buffs was because you can sprinkle now Q talents throughout a build that otherwise wouldn't be a full Q build. And that makes Ragnaros all right. I mean, Lava Wave is always really good at stalling. We have a lot of really powerful level 20 abilities. We continue to add more every day. I wouldn't be surprised if the Reign of Ragnaros comes back.
Yeah, what I find interesting, though, is like, you know, I'm looking over at Hotslogs and people are taking the Q talents. And as a matter of fact, if I filter by the most recent patch, it looks like Sulfurous Hungers has finally overtaken Engulfing Flame for the most popular talent. However, Engulfing Flame still has a noteworthy higher win percentage. Sulfurous Hunger has tipped over the 50% win percentage, but just barely. It was sitting below it before. But Engulfing Flame is still almost at a 53% win rate by comparison.
The decrease in the stacks needed to complete Sulfurous Hungers is really, really nice.
That it is.
And that means a more active Ragnarok. It's kind of that Falstad thing, right? Like, it's not only that we went through and buffed Falstad, maybe. It's that we got rid of Bribe, which has this cascading effect as Falstad doesn't fly to that camp, as Falstad makes the team fight, as Falstad hearths back to core in order to get healed up to fly out again. All this just means a more aggressive Falstad, and Ragnaros being done, you know, five or so earlier, means that's one less minion wave they now has to wait for, which means he makes that objective.
That's a good point. Yeah. Yeah. We all want our offlaners to actually show up to the fight every once in a while, right?
We do. I think that it's a tough world of lessons, and it depends, though, naturally. Ooh, I could tell you all about that from this week's NGSs.
Well, I sat in on one of them, and I'm still icing my wounds.
Well, and thank you for doing so. Oh my goodness! And we had a really, really nice enemy team. I don't want to put this on them at all. They certainly weren't, you know, hitting the clock. But we had a missing player. They were running late home from work. We didn't know yet, and you swooped in, filled in that game. Win or lose, it would have been an automatic loss due to just the rules. So thank you for showing up for that. And I'm sorry, your Sonya had to, you know, get beaten up so bad. They were a good enemy team.
Yeah, they were. They were true hunters.
They're also a franchise, which I don't know. It's kind of getting a little suspect. It's getting a little weird over there at NGS.
Do you want to expand on that? What do you mean by a franchise?
Like there's this apparent conglomerate called Phoenix Rising, and I don't know what exactly the story is, but it seems that there was maybe once a team called Phoenix Rising who had so many subs, much like a raid group. They're like, well, we'll just start Phoenix Rising Ruby and Sapphire. I don't know if it's a Pokemon thing or not. And so now there are two Phoenix Rising teams, and they scrim against each other and prove together and have probably a Discord where they exchange information. And, you know, and that gave birth to like four more Phoenix Risings. And now there's like 20 Phoenix Risings, and they just ate other teams. Like the one we fought last night was called Roomba Rotations, which is such a beautiful, adorable name in the first place that they're losing.
When you told me that, I was just like, as advertised, like their rotations were perfect.
What a waste of a fabulous name. But, you know, the franchises come with perks. You get an oven when you set up a Subway. They pay for the oven, Garrett.
Are you aware of how much you have to buy in to begin with on a Subway? So, I mean,
I am a little bit, not very much. I've never really gotten into it, though. And I think we talked about this with Not Paradox, actually, with the hamburgers.
So are you saying when you join Phoenix Rising, they provide you with good rotating players? What is the oven in this analogy?
You sign up, you go over there and you're like, hey, I am Shotguller team captain. I'm looking for players. And they go, OK, for low money down investment, we will send you one soaker, one assassin, and one player who doesn't follow the rules. you need that wild man, you know. You gotta be the wild card.
You need Charlie Day jumping out the back of a van with a cowboy.
Exactly. That's what you exactly need. You know, I mean, that's actually, you know, Always Sunny is pretty much the perfect MOBA group.
You know, I think there's one too many wild cards, actually. I think I would fight you on that.
Yeah, it probably wouldn't really work in our sort of... It's probably a better like Dota League of Legends team where they're just out for kills rather than objectives and soaking and all these kind of... they'd love last hitting, actually, and Always Sunny because, you know, they'd want to be rich themselves. But, you know, you have the tank like Mac. He he thinks he can take more hits than he can, or he's stronger than he can. You know, it's perfect. It's a perfect analogy. No problems. Anyway, my point being, you didn't like, you walked into what was stylized as a neighborhood store. Like that team made, like, there were little knickknacks on the shelves. There was local art on the walls, but it was actually just a spinoff of Starbucks, now called, like, you know, the Mick Cafe. You're not in a cafe. You're in a McDonald's. You were in a McDonald's last night, Garrett.
Gotcha. That's why there was so much milk in my latte.
There you go. Mm. Wait, what? Does McDonald's make over milky lattes?
Everything I've ever gotten from Mick Cafe has been over milked, no matter what it is. Yeah.
Well, the ice cream machine's broken, so maybe they got to get rid of it.
That would also explain why it's over-sugared. But anyways, well, that's good to know. Thank you, Kyle. I thought that analogy was going a different way, because it kind of felt to me like I walked into a branded kind of everyday gym and they were like, surprise, it's CrossFit. I was like, no, not the ropes. But
yeah, that's actually not a bad analogy either. I would go with the cycling classes, because those are always like the most biggest lies welcoming thing in the world. We're just going to ride some bikes. You don't even move. Come hang out in our air conditioned room. And before you know it, guys, you know, encouragingly screaming at you. And they're like, stand up, stand up, stand up. And you're having to spin. And, you know, it's been easier if they took off the brakes. But those are for resistance.
Well, whatever the case is, it was an eye opening experience nonetheless. But let's get back to the check in on things. So let's turn our eye to who got nerfed. And we put in the nerf category Diablo, Muradin, Hogger, and Chromie. And they are all down almost a noteworthy amount. Hogger got dinged for like 1%, which lines up with your concern. You didn't think it was enough, and it sure doesn't seem like it was.
Yeah, I mean, we are seeing a bit of a transformation on Hogger as people move away from no control a little bit towards anger management, which actually makes perfect sense. Let me actually grab the text here for anger management. So Hogger has become, for those who can't play him like myself, I'll go and throw myself in that category, it's very much like a race to 20 sort of situation. It's kind of like an ETC who can only death mosh. I'm also one of those ETCs, and I win games like that, but it's not the best way to play. Hoggers have adapted a little bit to on the prowl, but still sporting that aggro range so they can get their rage up really fast in team fights and then go into a no control, which of course is an untalented hog wild. But if you have full rage, bounces all over the enemy team and does massive damage, particularly if they're clumped. So tournament players, or anyone who's not good at spreading living bombs, have all said, oh, well, we'll just spread out. That means Hogwild doesn't hit multiple people and thereby doesn't murder the entire enemy team. So the nerf to Hogwild as a base ability was a nerf to no control, because it's an untalented Hogwild. So now the really, really good hoggers are basically saying, oh, well, anger management at level 20 increases my maximum rage by 50, which means the bonuses for cooldown refresh and hog wild damage go up to 150% instead. Basic attacks also give additional rage, but that's not that important because you're using this on the prowl into aggro range, sort of double cast. That also means at level 7, you're going seeing red for reduced cooldowns on hog wild. So massive rage, reduced cooldowns, more hog wilds, no need for no control anymore because your hog wild's going to do more damage anyway. So basically what I'm saying is Hogger's really hard to play. And so by nerfing him slightly, everyone said, well, he's still great. I'll just play the even harder to do build and he'll be even more powerful than he was. So we'll see that win rate continue to go down for a while as everyone kind of makes that switch. Mm,
gotcha. So the power is still there, but it's locked behind an even higher skill floor you need to clear.
Exactly. It is such a treat. It is a gift that such an insanely high skill cap hero was released this late in the game's life. But it's definitely what, like, imagine if they came out with Abathur today. You know, it's so weird and it's so much work that we are going to take years to figure out this hero.
That's a really good analogy. Yeah, because Abathur, it's kind of crazy to think that hero has been in the game since the tech alpha.
Yeah, he was a poster child of what the game was capable of.
Yeah. Yeah. It really just set the stage, as you pointed out. I'm not feeling Cromie being down. I know she is. You look at the numbers. She's taking a ding. Cromie is still the go-to mage in my experience.
Right. It is perfectly understandable. You have that view. Good Cromies are fine. Bad Cromies are out of mana. And I don't really want to call them bad either. That's not actually a very good way to put it. Because Sandblast costs you 20 mana. So less aware, less vigilant Cromies are having to wait 2 extra seconds between Sandblast because they run out of mana, is basically the story. But they still get to 20 mana, cast a Sandblast with their Echoes firing Sandblast into the Bronze Talon, sort of auto built-in talent nowadays. She's still hammering away. It's just that she could be hammering harder if you're better. So I guess a little bit of a hogger situation, right? We'll probably see this go down, which it did, almost 4%. And it'll go right back up when people figure it out.
Mm-hmm. Does it make you, because it kind of makes me want to see the other mages messed with. I would like a more straightforward mage that can bring similar power to Cromie, but maybe Cromie still has more potential when played correctly. It's just difficult to do so.
I feel you.
We talked about this was on the show, right? I can't remember what we talked about on the show and off stream sometimes, but we talked about last week how it's like Cromie's still considered the go-to mage and that really no other mage is given competitive respect.
Right. And that's merely about burst potential, the ability to just kill somebody dead outright.
And is that an issue kind of across the board? Because really, like, no one does what Hogger does, and no one really does what Cromie does. And these are two very popular, restricted picks in competitive. And is that where we're at on the meta? Is that where we need to, where we're hoping the developers' eyes turn to? Is kind of widening our options in draft again?
Well, the immediate thing you're asking for is more bursts in the mages, which doesn't sound fun.
Fair.
Right. Like we can elevate Kael'thas to Cromie levels, and we can do that in a number of ways. The perhaps most scary one, and perhaps maybe the most fun. I don't know. It's tough to say because his counterplay is basically that it's very dangerous for Kael'thas to put out living bombs in the first place. Not only do they get spread in lower leagues, Kael'thas can actually walk up far enough in lower leagues to put those bombs on people. I think the fantasy of Jaina, to me anyway, is kind of an ice barrier Jaina that is very much in the thick of it, weaving about, trying to hold on to her shields. It's a lot like a Kerrigan in that way. But maybe there are Jainas out there who really enjoy that power exchange of going, no, I want to be made of glass, but I'm going to poke with this Frostbolt build that I like running. Does my desire to make Jaina more in the thick of it ruin their play style?
I mean, you're bringing up the challenges of, I think, any and all balance, and it's something we've heard previous balance designers, because we still don't know who the current one is, talk about, right? Is that there's the balancing act, especially when you go for full-on reworks of, well, keeping the existing player base and fans of that hero happy and still making it a meaningful enough change to actually be exciting and maybe get this hero included in more drafts.
Tassadar is too low mobility. Orphea is susceptible to blind, seems to be her issue at the moment, if I were to take a big guess. There's also...
That is very unique, right? Because, what other mage can you say that about?
Yeah. It's a very interesting situation for Orphea right now, because she is too slow compared to Cromie. But we don't really want it to be any other way. And in solo queue, there's a lot of people wandering around by themselves, and Orphea can absolutely hunt them down. So I do not I do not think this job is going to be easy, but yes, there does need to be something done. We do need a mage apocalypse or a mage. What's a positive apocalypse?
A mage
renaissance.
Oh, a renaissance. Okay. I went with dirty music festivals, but cool. You go with a classy renaissance. I like that. Yeah. Yeah. With our conversations in like the last month, that's where my brain's kind of been turning, is that it's feeling like there's not as many options in draft. Some of that's probably brought on by the fact that I spend a lot of time talking to you, and so a lot of competitive draft thoughts are leaking into my brain. It's probably not as bad in our home games, but
yeah. Well, and the snowball, the dominoes continue no matter which way you go, because the lack of burst mages also means that we can have extremely diverse front lines, like double bruiser, even triple bruiser comps. If we up burst in the game, a lot of those options go away, like main tank Sonya, as insane of a thing as that is. That might disappear. Or is Giant Slammer Sonya a result of having these massive front lines again? Like, we used to call it double tank, but now it's just warrior? It's bruisers and Johanna, really. It's a very weird atmosphere. So this meta is pretty settled, and it is a very fun one for all players. And I'm very cautious to take any fun away from the tanks, because that's who would suffer the most.
That's a good point. We haven't talked about the three heroes that kind of got light reworks. I mean, we talked about Lili and Falsett already in our personal games, but there's also Tyrael, and we haven't really talked about where they've landed. But Falsett rocketed up. We talked about it a little bit last week, but a portion of that was due to that bug that was fixed now more than a week ago. And
he has an additional bug, though, at the moment, sadly.
Oh, I was unaware of this. What is it?
He is getting increased duration on his slow, and it's lasting longer than it should, given certain talents in the pick order.
Are they lightning talents?
I'm not sure exactly which talents they are. Maybe Chat can help me out. Because he's not banned completely in tournament play.
But W level one, says Chat, which, yeah. Kyle, guess what the popularity is on W level one talent if I filter to just the most recent patch?
80%.
Oh, actually, you overshot it. 71.
Okay.
It is picked 71% of the time.
And you can see how that's problematic.
Yeah, it has a 57% win rate.
If you have the talent that you're trying to stay connected with people longer, and your slow is somehow bugged to last longer, you will connect for them longer, and it's an issue. So, still a bugged Falstad.
Yep. I'm getting better. I'm getting better on him. I'm still I'm still overextending, and it just makes me think, Kyle, that maybe I always overextend. I'm just not on Falstad, so I get away with it.
That could be. Maybe that's why you like Rexxar so much, because you literally have a bear who overextends for free.
Yes, I have. Behold, the harbinger of my overextension.
Yeah, and when you have to escape, you have a power slide to go through people, and it walks back to you while you maintain your safety. Like, you know, one of the toughest things about overextending is that afterthought of being like, wait, if I go backwards, if I go into the fort, do I live there? Could I have gone into a corner of the core and found an angle where the buildings can't touch me and hearthed out because no one was looking?
Yeah, that's definitely it. But Falsett, he has backed back down off of his win rate, but he's still doing quite well over on Hotzalogs, sitting at a 54% win rate at the moment. Lili is up, still hasn't broken through the 50% win rate, which is where we start to perk up and we're like, yay, you're over 50%. She's at 49.5, real close, but she's climbing. So I think she could get there. She feels so good to me. It's insane.
I think she's really solid. It's nice to have such a powerful cleanser available in the draft and something that can, you know, be late picked. Hey, another part of this bizarre ecosystem we have. I think that if we had no Chromies, no Falstads, and no Hoggers, no Cassias, I might be banning Lili because that'd be an early pick. Also, Tyke is still going. Does Lily help with that? Yeah, it's a puzzle.
Well, yeah, I mean, we're still doing front-to-back comps, right? So I think Tychus is going to be a part of the equation until that gets upset.
Yeah, or they ruin grenade range is probably the big thing that they could do if they didn't want to see Tychus again, which shouldn't happen.
Yeah.
I like seeing him around.
Yeah. And then there's Tyrael basically not moving, kind of just staying right where he's been. He's in popular company with Leoric and Alarax.
He's good. He's a hunter. He naturally, with sanctification, can turn off a lot of powerful alts on our bruisers. I didn't expect him to fly up because he's just kind of weird. So exactly where he should be in my book.
Yeah, I'm impatiently awaiting his rework, because I feel like Tyrael could be a hero that I really like playing. This is a little not my jam right there, but there's like a glimmer of something that really appeals to me in his kind of janky, just kind of smacking you lane presence way. I kind of dig that. But they hinted at a rework in those dev comments, and just like I'm taking it, man. If it wasn't meant to be hinting at a rework, then well, too bad. That's where my brain went, and now I'm excited. No,
I believe they literally said something along the lines of, "Hey, here's to tide you over some of our thoughts for updating Tyrael." I think that he is so unique, and he's had the same tools for so long. I've got no idea what they would do to him. Let's see. The previous comment was, there are so many things we want to do with Tyrael in the future, but for the time being. Okay. I honestly can't imagine Tyrael without the tools he has right now, unless we take him to Bruiser Town.
That's,
which would be very cool.
That's where I'd like to see him go. I know, yeah. We talked about him going to Melee Assassin, but I think that's more of my, because we had just had a conversation a few weeks ago about like the lack of Melee Assassins. We got that email that came in, you know, like where do they fall, so on and so forth. Like, I think it's more my desire for like more Melee Assassins than it is me actually going to a place that makes sense. Like, I don't think it really makes sense for Tyrael to become a Melee Assassin. He is already so bruiser adjacent that I could see a rework totally taking him in that direction. I think it'd have to be a pretty out there rework, like the likes of which we haven't seen before. And we do have a new balance designer, so maybe it goes that direction. Yeah. Like we'll have to see. But yeah, it makes more sense that they would double down on his bruiserisms, get him properly away from tank, and just like let it fly, right? See, he's still classified as a tank, which I find hilarious.
Well, so is Blaze, and none of those are necessarily wrong. It's just that there are so many particulars and counters when you get to that level that, if anything, we have to, it's almost like we have to label who is early pick tankable rather than what's just a tank. That's an ongoing puzzle, though. Like, that gets into game education, how people know if something's good or not. And we're also coming to the end of our 30 days free-to-play heroes, so I'm curious to see what the new players stick with.
Yeah. Could we trade Tyrael for a bruiser? Could we make a bruiser a tank and make Tyrael a bruiser?
I think that's an interesting idea.
Who would be at the top of your list? Because I think it might be Artanis for me.
Oh, to go full tank, huh?
I mean, so think about it already. Artanis has a displacement. One of our most popular tanks right now, Garrosh, is like the king of that, right? You know, displacing an enemy hero. But Artanis doesn't really have a way to like hold them there afterwards.
Hmm.
Would it be insane? Would it be too powerful if we gave Artanis a way to hold on to what he just swapped?
I'm looking at the list. I don't know, man. All that juging with the blades. I don't know. It's a high octane butchery kind of experience of just one more shield. I can do it. You know who I'd say? Deathwing.
That's bold.
Yeah. He's unstoppable. much like some tanks. He has regeneration abilities, and currently he's being used as Sneaky Mage. You know, like abusing graphics through walls. Like Murkies do this kind of thing with their pufferfish.
Yeah, but that works. That makes sense. That's like kind of what I expect from Murky. It's not what I expect from the biggest single hero in the game.
Right. So if we lower his damage and up his regen and survivability, and then you have an entire backline who can't even heal or interact with the tank, maybe that Vala does get the heal she needs. And I'm not throwing shade here either. You should be healing Vala anyway, and maybe not ETC in that situation because ETC's engage is already over. But it's tough to find the fantasy of Deathwing without his power being broken in damage. So maybe we move away from that and make his fantasy that he's literally an armored dragon.
Hmm. Chat room was, of course, talking about Imperius, which makes a lot of sense. We haven't talked about Imperius in a while.
That's true.
But I am still seeing main tank Imperius play.
He is the lowest win rate bruiser in the game because of his lane clear. Like that is it. He just has trouble with lanes. And the counterplay to fighting a bruiser with bad lane clear is to clear the lane and then deal with them after, because the lane collapse and then they get pushed out. You get tower damage and like it all snowballs. So you have 4-man Imperius, which is fine. So we lower his damage and make him more survive. I think his survivability is fine. And we just lower his damage. Yeah, that doesn't sound right. That's the fun of him. I'm sure Deathwing's just said the same thing. The fun is that people die in my awesome light, my fire breath.
I think I would go to bat more for the Imperius comment than the Deathwing one, because I'm just like, I just don't want Deathwing hiding in a bush. That's just, it's so not the fantasy I had for the character.
I think Thrall is an excellent, excellent tank.
That would be interesting. I mean, he's a little Arthas adjacent, right? Because he just roots. He doesn't stun, he roots, and it's a skill shot root.
Yeah, his sort of thing right now is that he has that root and amazing giant killer talents, which are failing in comparison to Sonya, but still has a lot of throughput and can delete a frontline Muradin Diablo sort of situation. Of course, he's also tied to things like Echo of Elements, which is still the most popular, which is farmed off in some distant lane usually, where you can control those kills more often. So he would definitely have to have more of a talent rework to get him in that position.
Yeah. And I would also not be surprised if they have the team has very little interest in broadening the bruiser palette.
It's massive.
It's so healthy right now.
Yeah.
It's so good. I mean, we can pick out outliers like Thrall, who maybe need a little help, but I'm surprised you haven't mentioned Urel yet now that we're talking about that. But
Urel's crazy. Like, and her win rate skyrocketed briefly after the patch and then went right back to down where it normally was. Like, Urels will keep playing Urel. I'm not that concerned about their wishes.
Yeah. Well, I guess we'll have to wait and see. We'll have to wait and see what's coming down the road, right? Oh, and then we put Alexstrasza, Lucio, White Mane, Illidan, Phoenix Tracer into the talent incentivization designation. And I say we, that's just the facts of how these heroes were adjusted with the most recent patch. And this is a mixed bag, man. Like the healers I just rattled off are down, but not a ton, except for maybe Lucio. Lucio losing a decent amount of win rate.
Yeah, well, High Five does have the higher win rate, but again, like, people picking High Five in a good situation, probably. You've still got beat drops that are canceling out things like Last Rites, so Lucio's still good. But mainly, if we were to look at these healers, I think you can just say Lili. Lili, Ana, Stukov, Brightwing, they're all doing just fine still. And that's always going to eat the lunch of things like Alexstrasza and White Mane, who are just harder to play. And hey, you know, Sand, by the way, flying in areas, Alexstrasza is just going to struggle.
Yeah. You know what I'm the most excited about here, though, with the talent incentivizations?
Hmm.
And I don't know why, because when he has been good in the past years ago, it was problematic, but Illidan.
It's fun to see him out and about, yeah.
He's above a 50% win rate.
He did make it.
It's been a long time since he's been there.
And I think that's probably more just people getting back to him rather than the actual switcheroo of the talents. But, you know, maybe.
Could be.
Maybe. Could be.
I mean, it's just,
or yeah. It could just be that there's this big hole in guy who goes off and does something, then flies into the fight. And that's Falstad is now busy doing team fights. So Illidan can actually do the camps. And hey, he's already good at that job.
Yeah, fair. I mean, that is just kind of that's a role we want filled, right? And so maybe we're able to start filling that with Illidan. Is he the alternative when the Falstad is taken, or when the offlaner you want is taken, or is there just so many of them that that's an insane, that's just not a statement we can make?
Yeah, I think then you're getting into comparing what Illidan's impact on the early game is versus Hogger and Sonya at the moment, which is just really not a contest.
Right. It's just like, can anyone really, and by all means, this is an actual question I'm posing right in itncast@gmail.com. Can anyone make an argument why one would go Illidan over the other kind of standard offline fare that we favor at the moment? Let me hear it. So that's our check-in, Kyle. That's our check-in. We have a little meta and talking more about industry. We've got more layoffs to discuss at Activision Blizzard. So this past week, according to multiple reports, a total of 50 employees were let go, the majority of which from esports divisions, and from Blizzard specifically, it seems like the majority of them were from Overwatch.
In particular, the Overwatch League handlers, people who were scheduling the live events and whatnot.
Yeah, so news of the layoffs broke first, and then the day after the news broke that they were going to be kind of moving away from their live arena events and their efforts towards that, which... This is such a mixed social bag, because we also got the news of Bobby Kotick's $200 million bonus coming in.
Sure. And of course, the 50 people was the original report. Now we're hearing more along the lines of 190 people let go. It was a above industry standard severance pay and benefits in that way, but also included a $200 gift card for Battle.net, which, you know, maybe you get fired from Disney World and they give you a free ticket to come back. Might be a little weird. It's some corporate nonsense, but it is an interesting conversation to have about maybe the end of esports as we knew it. Certainly, it struggled to have any live events, of course, over the last year, soon to be a year and a half. The fact that hope remained that there was a continuing process to further support live events this long after the fact is kind of amazing and speaks to maybe the success of those. But this also took my head in a lot of other directions. So before I take us off that beaten path, anything on the particular news article?
I just wanted to say that I didn't see that there were updates, and now I am seeing that there were updates, that the figure is considered somewhere between 50 and 190. That's a pretty big spread.
Yeah.
I always just get so bummed out anytime anyone gets laid off, and it just has been happening at least once a year now, it seems like, at Activision Blizzard, while Bobby Kotick continues to, I don't know, buy additional yachts for himself.
Sure. You know, it's thrown into sharp contrast to the February 4th statement that Blizzard employees adapted so well to working at home and actually increased profits, and they saw equal, if not increased, productivity in some areas. Like, that's insane. And then to, you know, have the top end make these sort of moves is it's its own complete madness that is showcased throughout our world at the moment. What interests me, though, is that we're seeing a Blizzard without Bobby Kotick. We're seeing a Blizzard that keeps firing, trying to find something. And it's as though the times aren't letting them land on anything. Like, you think of these esport events and how sports-like they are. But here comes something like Fortnite, which can be played solo and gathers these huge crowds for a single individual to compete. And you have to look at something like that emerging out of the massive piles of League of Legends, Dota, and Heroes of the Storm, even trying to do these team play environments and say, well, look, they just happen to get it right for a Twitch era. And we don't need stadiums and lights and camera crews when someone with a webcam can entertain that many people in one go.
And I'm not sure how much I agree with that, because I just kind of look at it as like comparing it to traditional sports. You have team sports and you have singular sports as well. In that case, the majority of them are things like the like what we see in the Olympics, right? But you also have boxing, which is 1v1. And we've had the same thing in esports forever. You have StarCraft, which is 1v1. You have fighting, which is 1v1. And then we have our team-based stuff, like your MOBAs and other games, like hell, even Rocket League and whatnot. So I don't know. I've never really looked at that as the issue. I mean, to me, this is just like so obviously a product of COVID and the pandemic. Like this was just like, it couldn't have been worse timing. And you've heard me wax philosophically about how I constantly draw the comparison between every other gaming studio on God's green earth overextending in the MMO market after the success of World of Warcraft. And while Blizzard certainly had their own overextension with Titan that they spun out into Overwatch successfully, I look at their overextension as esports. That was the trend that Blizzard overextended into, and that's what we're seeing the results of now.
It's a particularly odd thing to happen to the Overwatch League as well. I'm not exactly finger on the pulse of Overwatch by any means, but the general consensus I gathered from fans was that you promised. You said, stick with us. You said, there's two coming, and it's going to be a big deal. And then to pull back while Overwatch League was kind of your hope for the next year for those players and their entertainment and their love of your game. That's where that is kind of insane for that game's audience.
Yeah, but it's not like the league is over, though. It's just, but the arena and like home base strategy was a whole new direction that was exciting. I mean, I'm not a big Overwatch fan. And I don't hide that fact. I'm pretty obvious about it. But even I was just like, oh man, when all this is over, I would love to go see a Miami game. That sounds awesome. Let's go do it. But it's not sounds like that's going to be a thing anymore.
I just wonder if it matches our current entertainment sensibilities. I think there is a lot to going outside. I've been to football, hockey, baseball games, probably baseball, maybe the most boring sport that I attended, but it was awesome because I was there with friends. And I guess at the time it was a company box, so it was actually really, really sweet, and there was like snacks and stuff. So maybe I'm a little fancy jerk. I'm a little twisted.
I've never been in a company box for a baseball game, sitting on a plastic chair, eating a $7 hot dog.
But I've been in both for like a football game, and those are both equally fun, being in the thick of it and up in the booth. I just wonder if we will continue to make games that move toward traditional esports. I don't know anybody, Kobe Bryant. If people like had pickup games that they streamed live on Twitch, could those become more popular than the official games, which are overorganized and have these dramas with them? I hope in the end that this can enter a world where Blizzard goes back to grassroots and they see an opportunity in a good league, in a good format to say, we will increase your prize pool. We're for this. Here's a stamp. But we've gone so far, even maybe the height of this, I would say the Diablo 3 auction house of control and licensing, that I don't see that happening.
I think all of it, and we've talked about HGC being kind of artificially propped up, right? And never really had a chance to grow naturally. It was just out the gate. Here's your, your very well produced, lots of money thrown at it, Blizzard produced event. And again, this kind of goes to things that I know I've mentioned before. So I'm trying to take it a slightly different angle with it, but it's just like, while I think the HTC side of thing, like I agree with those comments and kind of the punditry we saw around it talking about how it was kind of artificially propped up. And I think it was. And I like the direction where certain other Blizzard properties have been going. StarCraft went this route first, and now it's the same thing's happening with Hearthstone, where they're handing over their leagues to third parties to manage. Because, and frankly, this is where I'll give you my personal take on it. It's just like, I have really kind of personally checked out of Blizzard esports in recent years. HTC was my favorite league, and they just straight up ended it. Then I kind of rekindled my love with GSL, which has always been like third party run. By now it's Afrika. It used to be GOM TV. Like, to me, GSL is still the gold standard of esports, and that's been the one I care the most about. And Hearthstone's just changed so much that I had issues with kind of damn near everything they tried with Hearthstone, but I really think with Grandmasters and the switch to YouTube, it was just a giant like misstep. And clearly their views over on Hearthstone are really bad. Like, the drop off from the final year that Hearthstone Esports was on Twitch to their first year on YouTube was astoundingly terrible. So it's just on top of the fact that I'd never really loved the Grandmasters format. So it's just on top of the fact that like we lost a lot of esports talent at Blizzard with the first big round of layoffs, like post Morheim leaving. You know, now it's just, I don't know. To me, there was just this thing in the back of my mind that the Overwatch side of things was going to be the successful version of this overinvestment. And I think to no fault of their own. It's what do you do with an actual historic event, something that our children's children are going to learn about in the history books when it comes in and destroys and upsets your brave new direction? I agree with you there. Don't know. And I guess it's the closest thing I get to like a complimentary thought is like, and I don't want this to undercut the fact at all that people lost their jobs. And again, the corporate culture, frankly, at a lot of corporations, but clearly at Activision, is concerning on a moral level to me. But my brain does go to, I'm surprised we made it this far without this decision having to be made. We're at a full year of dealing with the pandemic at this point and no hope of very large arena events for at least that Activision Blizzard is comfortable with putting on in sight.
It makes me wonder if the grand esports experiment has failed. And I think there are still examples of it existing and thriving and being something that people want to watch. But have we overextended the requirements on players? Might even be another philosophical way to take this. You have players beta testing your games, joining PTR. You then have, maybe in this case, and this might be a little intense, but you have AI that isn't getting updated. So you need players to fight other players. You pit your audience against each other. You're making them test the game, then you're making them pit it against each other. And then at the very top end, your biggest investment is more players fighting players. It feels kind of weird to me that when I thought as a wee lad looking at World of Warcraft, I thought we'd be battling, employees in VR suits at this point. Like, literally, like, that was my childhood dream, is that I would enter the boss arena. There'd be some guy at corporate HQ who put on his VR headset and say, okay, I'm going to pretend to be Lothar the Destroyer for the day. Here come the raid teams. Let's do this.
Yeah.
So what's next? We're seeing it's really interesting too, talking about just the general gaming sphere right now, because there's something called, is it Outriders coming out soon? And it's looking like it's going to be a big deal, but it's not a live service game. It's kind of a one and done thing.
I don't know. I think we're getting off the beaten path then. I mean,
sure, of course.
We're going to just start talking about like every popular game, and it's like it's not, it doesn't have to do with esports. Like, I don't think Outriders even could possibly be one. So I don't know, man. I don't think the grand experiment of esports has failed. I don't think so. But I don't know. I think it is a fine line to walk being like with the studio being involved with their own damn esports. I think Valve does it well. I think Riot does it well. This is the kind of thing where Blizzard was not able to get out of their own way. I think they overextended in some places, underextended in others. And I don't know. I also just don't want to sit here and beat a dead horse.
Absolutely. And let's let that horse rest and we can move on.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just a bummer. So we'll, let's see what it sucks having these conversations and like, again, like I'm just trying, I don't want to be disrespectful to people who lost their jobs, but at the same time, I look at StarCraft going to a third party for esports and I go, thank God, I'm going to still have StarCraft to watch. And that's just like, I think that's the realism for niche audience esports. I think you still can have big events for the big tent poles, but I think the games that you and I like aren't those. They aren't those tent poles.
Sure.
No. Anyways, weird thing. I'm sure it's not the last time we'll have a discussion about what the hell is going on with esports as a whole, but
not at all. And we are, you know, a part of this Activision ecosystem, even if we like to think of ourselves as removed and adjacent. All this sort of stuff matters, and we want nerd TV. I think that's what you're saying. Like, you want to continue to have your version of the Super Bowl to look forward.
Yeah. Yeah, even though I'm like kind of weirdly enjoying the Super Bowl now. Anyway, it's not just because Tampa won. I can't stand Tom Brady. But yes, I am with you, dude. I am with you. But anyways, getting back to the Heroes side of things, I want to have a conversation with you, dude. Who do you think the New Balance designer is? Do you think it's someone we know? Do you think it's someone maybe we're intimately familiar with commenting in our Reddit?
I do think signs point to Blizz D. Warner being in charge of the current balance. He has been around saying we'll fix about things that don't necessarily need immediate fixing, like Anduin's light bomb. People were talking this week about it not having a level 20 talent. He got in there with a winky face. Also commented on the Mal'Ganis bug saying, quote, whoopsie poopsie, we'll fix. To me, that makes it sound rather personal. And then, of course, he was the one who posted, I can't believe I have to summon my own patch notes. I think that's pretty good.
Yeah,
pretty good evidence.
Yeah, I'm starting to feel it too. I am just trepidatious because D. Warner has been super involved in community outreach for a while now.
True.
I don't know. I guess it's just because it's been so quiet. Well, I'm wondering. Do you think they just have no interest in being a public face?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, no, I would hide. I would ice frog it. I would be a completely anonymous, bizarre figure, a force, an essence in the wings that no one could possibly predict. People are savage with their comments. And a lot of it is done in fun. But, you know, even in that position, making choices about balance, knowing you might be ruining somebody's night, their good time, that's scary. And then to go further, to have a wealth of people say, I don't even know how they thought this was okay. Like, that's aggressive language. Even a simple statement that with no, you know, expletives or anything is really intense. I would hide. Because I have to make difficult decisions 24/7. About how I'm going to change this game and its content for everybody.
I hope they find ways to continue communicating with us, even if we don't get like a name. Like
I hope so too. You
know, if it's D. Warner and D. Warner just isn't like telling us, yeah, I'm the New Balance designer. Like, Cool. Keep it up. I like your style. Keep getting into the subreddit and talking with us.
Absolutely. And I want to know that there is a sort of visionary behind these things. I do want to hear someone's personal preferences. I'm the balance designer and I love playing Butcher. And you go, all right. Like, yeah, that person's in on it. Like, you always hear about, you know, do they even raid when it comes to like World of Warcraft critiques? And we know our developers love and play this game. So, of course, we want to know the ins and outs of what they love and what they're going to change going forward. And that handover from AZ Jackson meant there was an opportunity for completely different philosophies to reign supreme. And that confirmation would be very comforting. But again, you asked me if I would put my name out there, and I'd say hell no, because most people ain't very nice about their critiques. Even simple stuff, the things I've heard about the Malfurion root with the sleep are insulting. They're intense. They're scary. For such a simple 0.5 extra seconds of lockdown.
Well, Kyle, that's all it takes sometimes, man.
It's true.
You know the game we're playing? Yeah, no, I'm the last one to go to bat for overly aggressive comments. But, you know, sometimes they really do just come from a place of passion.
Absolutely. I think the real problem we need to target is the boxes on gaming peripherals and them having screaming nerds on them. I hate that. And let's start the change there.
One of our local colleges has two billboards in town with a screaming esports dude, and it says, "This is esports." And I hate it. Every time I drive by it, I just groan.
Like maybe holding up a cup, maybe shaking a hand, maybe even bills sticking out of your collar. Like anything's better than that.
Kyle, nobody wants to see an album cover of your favorite musical artist delivering a calm dissertation on how they would like to see the world changed.
What?
This is true across all media. No one wants to see a calm person for whatever you're advertising.
Oh, I guess that's true.
You want Angus Young like standing upright playing guitar like a normal person, not in a schoolboy outfit, even though he's way too old to be wearing that?
I kind of just want to see someone who looks like put together, who's having the sandwich I'm eating, like, you know.
Maybe this isn't why we're more internet famous, Kyle.
Maybe we just don't play the game hard enough. Maybe. We're not screaming or angry.
We're not yelling enough. We're not YouTube thumbnailing enough.
I tried the angry thing, and it was exhausting.
You tried what?
We're talking like 21 years old, like doing the angry internet nerd thing.
Oh, God. It's just exhausting.
It's tiring.
It is exhausting. You get me on the right subject, though. I'm happy to yell.
Oh, sure.
I'm happy.
Sure.
I'm happy to yell.
Sure. Star Trek Beyond, man.
You're shitting on the wrong Star Trek.
Such an awful
There
movie.
Is such a clearly worse one. And it came right before that one. I will never understand the way your brain works.
Yeah, preferences.
Yes, and they are unrealistic. At least we'll always have HOTS, Kyle.
At least we'll always have HOTS together.
At least we'll always
have HOTS. And Valheim, for now.
Oh, yeah, for now. I mean, at the rate we are currently going through Valheim, I think we'll have Valheim for 7 years before we beat all these bosses.
It's true. But at least our base will be well-decorated.
I got back in there, and I got attacked by a troll at our new tower, by the way, alone.
Oh, really? So well, it's a stone tower.
Luckily. I got attacked by three more trolls.
Is it okay? Is Troll Killer Base all right?
We now have a full fence around the fort.
Oh, that sounds
yeah.
Good.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. Patrons, be on the lookout for another Broheim Valheim bonus VOD this week.
It's basically just a renovation show where I've been living at a hotel with my mother for a whole week, and then I come back home and Garrett shows me the redone bathroom.
This is what I've been doing when I can't sleep at night, and I haven't been feeling well, so I haven't been sleeping well. So a lot of building has been happening in Valheim. Yeah, so there's that. There's
actually Pimp My Truck. That's the one I want to go with. You pimped my truck.
Pimp My Truck?
Yeah.
The boat?
The car. Yeah, the show, the TV show.
Pimp My Ride, man.
No, Pimp My Truck is the superior version of Pimp My Car Pimp My Ride, because Pimp My Ride was full of people like putting blenders in the back seats of hippie cars. Like that was useless. And I can tell you that 20 something year old is not going to maintain that blender, nor that lemongrass they put in the back seat there. But you go and you refurbish a driver's working vehicle that they live and breathe out of. That's emotion. That gets me in the heart. I like watching truckers cry.
Well, I like watching our listeners write into us. So shall we read some messages from our dear community?
Yes.
Darkness, stop calling.
Darkness just texted me.
It's not the moment. It's a hero problem.
You can write in to itncast@gmail.com if you're supporting us on Patreon. Well, just poke us on the Patreon Discord. It's right there. Do it. Thank you for your words of encouragement last night, by the way, Dax. I don't get added very often, so I appreciate it. Mangrel wrote in and says, a more strategy-based question if you want to talk about playing the game instead of Blizzard ignoring it. Oh, for crying out loud.
Whoa.
Wow. Wow. Might be some info Kyle can pull from his NGS/Hero League games or HL games. Hero League isn't a thing.
No. Heroes Lounge, which isn't a thing anymore. That's either.
Sorry. Yep. There you go.
We didn't talk about that, but Heroes Lounge is going back to exclusively EU, I believe, because Nexus Gaming Series is just winning out. I guess it was kind of a nebulous announcement, but it sounded like it was just a lot of work to maintain.
Gotcha. Anyway, Mangrel continues. How do you recover when behind in organized games? It's rare that someone is out of position in lane for an easy kill. Is there anything you can do other than safely soaking? When can/should you take a risky boss or camp steal as a last attempt to pull the match back into your favor? We were in this position last night.
Yes, we were. So the biggest thing I can say about recovering from behind, if you are actually super far behind, the comp you built probably didn't work out. Not that it's wrong, but you didn't play it correctly. And that is a big, wide ocean of misunderstandings and lack of communication.
That's certainly where like my head is from. Like last night's anecdotal experience too. It just kind of felt like we had a comp and it didn't work out. I tend to like this line of thinking because it gets into something I love talking about, which is like, for the love of God, be open to changing your strategy mid match. And it's something I find so fascinating of higher league players when I play with them is, so many of them are just, no, I know these truths and I shall not be moved from them. And I'm like, well, that's nice. We don't live in that world at this exact moment and we need to adjust.
Right. Yeah, it is a tough universe. Hanging out with more higher league players has only exhausted me to the conversation of player education more, which is kind of interesting. Because oftentimes when you ask a question, you get if everything was perfect, this is the scenario answer. But everything wasn't perfect, so how can it be different? And it can't. Like, the answer is now different. They don't know that answer anymore because the perfect scenario didn't exist for them to give you the right answer. So getting back to the question here, you're right about finding somebody out of position in lane. That might take multiple people, which means everyone needs to be hunting together. And that sort of highlights where the difficulty of your situation comes in, because something is changing, because something went wrong in the first place. So something the Gilly Sharks do that I think is just phenomenal, and it's so cheesy, is every time the draft ends, they do a checklist. Who is our target? Do we win lane clear? Do we win objective? How are we rotating? Things like that. If you build an interrupt comp, let's say for Garden of Terror, like we did last night, who's interrupting? And that has to constantly be said aloud, because let's get a little, you know, personal here. If I'm on D.Va and we say I have an interrupt comp, they're channeling the objective and everyone's yelling interrupt, interrupt, interrupt. My first thought is, okay, I have the tools and the power. Let me go do it. But it wasn't my job. That now put me in danger. I die. And I go, well, what was that? I thought we were interrupting. It was Chromie's job that whole time. So if you make a unique comp that loses objectives, that gives certain area of the maps to get to level 20 hog or no control, there needs to be constant communication over and over and over again as to who's doing what and why those things are being given up because of that original statement. And hopefully that checklist you did in the draft there.
That's a good breakdown. And in terms of taking calculated risks, I'm glad that Mangrel mentioned organize, because then I just assume you are on comms. And so that split second of, oh, there's more of them in this lane than should be, we might be able to sneak a boss if we act at this exact moment.
Well, and there are ways to get back in games that are not at all apparent. And this, again, returns to High League players not being able to tell you the exact situations because they only know the ideal. So last night I learned of a situation where on Cursed Hollow, you can go take your... So let's say you're in an objective fight, and let's make this really extreme. You're about to get cursed, but three people die. They're zoning the enemy team. It's now 5v2. Enemy side has the five. You have the two, but you manage to get that curse, and it's full curse time. There's nothing that two can do anymore. They can't win the game. And their reaction may be to be mad at those other three players who died. But what they could do, which is very interesting, is they could go take a boss, sit by that boss for the entirety of the curse, and then only take the boss once the rest of the team has rest. And now you can push with a boss with five. And you never cleared the lane that was in that lane, because when you take the boss, it'll stop to slam the lane, which slows it down, giving a chance for those three other players to make a five stack and catch up. Like, what is that insane situation? Where do you learn that in a guide?
You learn it by playing enough games and seeing that situation over and over again in an environment where you are communicating with your team and working as a unit.
Exactly. So even though, you know, we say here, should we take a risky boss? Yes. But we can reduce that risk further with other strategies that I don't know or may only exist in your particular game because they're clearing top wave and you know it. So this boss is safe to sit on and not take immediately.
And it's almost like a MOBA with multiple maps introduces a lot of variables.
Yeah. And that is
scenarios.
Right. That is a definite issue with the game and the longevity of it. Also, the unique characters is another extreme issue with this game. Our heroes are so wildly diverse that people often learn only one at a time, can master one at a time. It's a fascinating game, Heroes.
Yeah. But thank you for your question, Mangrel. Best of luck in your organized play. Another Kyle wrote in, Kyle.
Okay. We like each other well enough.
Says, I do still struggle with anxiety in joining games with live players. I rarely, if ever, dabble in quick match, but have never tried Storm League. The feeling of being bad and letting the team down makes me too anxious to even queue up. I am not the best at MOBAs and have slow reflexes. I'm a shift worker, so scheduling play with others regularly is hard, even if I had friends who played this game. Anyways, just would like your thoughts or hear what makes you feel confident in HOTS or any recommendations. Much love from Cape Town, South Africa. Man, 10 years in and it will never stop being cool hearing people write in from other countries.
Oh, totally. So this situation is a pretty common one and is combated with game knowledge, which you're not going to get versus AI. And certainly not going to get a lot of in quick match, because when people wail on you and get very mad, your ego is propped up by game knowledge and your ability to say, well, they're wrong, or, oh, damn, they're right. That's new and interesting to me. I have conversations with enemy players. I leave my whispers open. And sometimes, of course, they're vulgar and get reported, but other times they say you sucked and you get to say why. They actually give you an answer, but that's not for everybody. And certainly, I mean, it is a gamble. You shouldn't spend money you don't have. You shouldn't spend anxiety you can't afford. So maybe you are doing the right thing by avoiding Stormleak, but if you really want to get in there and you want to see all these moving parts and the draft get going, I think there are safer places where you can be.
Are you about to recommend ARAM?
No. Well, ARAM is interesting. You know, I actually would recommend ARAM just to see some comps, just to feel a seven-sided strike go off on five people and then maybe go off on a single person. Like, there's just, there are lessons to be learned with a higher chance of maybe a functioning comp over there. And
also, just, you're going to learn to play against humans controlling the characters.
Yeah. Yeah. Check that tab screen. See what killed you. If something seems surprising or did too much damage, look at talents, start that curiosity and investigation. But my first thought was, well, maybe we can, you know, recommend a role. But people yell at you for tanking. People, you won't really learn anything if you're off solo laning or double soaking about other people. Or
people
why
will
you
love
lost.
You, though, if you, well,
win. If you win.
If you win, people will love you.
Yeah.
To me, like, just like logging games is about being personally interested. So I always first just recommend, like, what are you interested in? Because if the answer is solo laning, cool. Go do it. I do. I have a heart. I was waiting for you to get done with kind of your general, suggestion before I straight up recommended, a hero. typically, anytime someone new comes to this game, and they're like, I want to start playing with real people, but I don't really, you know where to start. I'm like, play support, find a support that you like, that makes you excited. And just play support and just go where you are needed. Don't worry. Don't turn this podcast off. Stop worrying about all of these like high level strategies we just mentioned. Follow people around, keep them alive. You're going to feel impactful. And then you're also going to learn about just moving around a map with people who are actually controlling the characters and kind of learn the general ebb and flow of a game of heroes. And right now, they did such a good job with this new Lili rework. And I can't think of a better hero to just like throw yourself blindly into playing against other real people with. Pun very much intended with Lili. Get in there, blind some people, auto heal people. You're going to have a good time.
I would go with Deckard.
Deckard, okay.
I think that you're, as long as you're casting potions, you're already doing 90% of things right. And nobody really minds seeing like a good old fashioned Sapphire fly into a root combo. And that's something pretty binary you could go learn on your own. And even if it's not followed up on, like, just like in this imaginary situation, Deckard lands a sweet root or Malfurion lands a sweet root. Which do you think was poorly timed when nobody died?
Wait. So Malfurion versus Deckard, roots get thrown, nobody dies. Who is worse? Is that what you're asking?
Yeah. Malfurion lands a sweet root, but nobody dies. Everyone's mad at Malfurion. Wasted root. Now he has no follow up for the tank. Deckard lands a root that hits five people. Nobody dies. Everyone's like, it'll just happen again. That happens all the time. That wasn't special.
Oh, so you're just saying that we are socially we've learned through social osmosis to not be mad at Deckard. Because when it does work, it's awesome.
Yeah, it's fine. It'll be fine. It's not that important anyway. They're going to get massively slowed. There might be a sleep someday. That's great. Hey, there's potions behind us anyway. And if you didn't pick them up, it's your fault. Like I would advertise that Deckard is the premier learn to watch other people while doing your thing hero. Now, we're not talking about, of course, like wanting to influence the game in the biggest way. You know, there's, of course, the old Rhaegar suggestions. Stukov is going to have way more pop power, kill power, as well as turn a fight around power, of course. And Lili has that fast feet thing going on where you should do a little bit of off tanking and can get destroyed. I think that Deckard is just way easier for watching others.
And that's fair. I think that's fair. But Lili will also, I like Lili because it will, I feel like it'll force you to be in the mix a little bit and be mindful of where you're standing. But maybe. I also really like Mr. X's in chat room suggestion of Rhaegar, because that is a good point. Rhaegar does bring wave clear and you'll learn one more very important lesson along the way.
But
I stand by it. Lely, go Lely. Just follow people around.
I think Rhaegar's healing output is too low. I'm sticking with Deckard for this one. I recommend Deckard.
I recommend Lely. And
both are fine.
Also, both are turn off chat.
Yeah, it's true.
Because everyone I talk to, when they have anxiety, they don't want to get yelled at. Just turn off chat.
Yeah,
you can. It's an option for a reason.
No, and I think it's fair to take a moment to talk about, you know, upbringing and the biases we have and all that sort of thing. Like, we grew up in a really aggressive internet that was really gross and disgusting to each other. So it's all the easier for me to be like, it's fine, shrug it off and report. But I'm happy that people don't have that experience. And they can have those options to turn that off and make their world a better place without absorbing that.
I turned it off last week while I was working on Falstad. I just didn't want to hear it.
Sure.
It's like, I'm in quick match, y'all. This is what I'm here for. This is why the mode exists. Shut up and leave me alone. Let me learn. Let me have my own fun and go on my own journey. So I still turn it off from time to time. If I'm learning something new, that chat gets turned off. I am uninterested in your criticisms of the hero I don't know how to play yet. And there's probably a life lesson there. I should probably stop listening to critique from Twitter and start listening to critique from the people I work with.
That then goes into my comment from earlier that's another company pitting us against to entertain each other. Like, go make a TV show. Stop this. stop encouraging this Twitter.
Yeah.
This is not entertainment.
Yeah. I didn't get into it, Corny, last week because it didn't come up. But the positive comments I mentioned last week came after I turned chat back on. But I was still a little rusty. In fact, I'm still not in a place where I would draft Falstad and feel comfortable. But I'm definitely seeing improvement, and it feels good. So
he's a lot of fun. We do have a question here in the chat, which I think is excellent to end on. Used to play HOTS a lot. I quit 3 years ago, and now I'm wondering how big the player base is around Platinum Diamond ranks, because I can recall that I've waited so long in queues back then.
Oh, I have good news for you.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's damn populated. There's a lot of people there. You're not going to wait long for a game.
Yeah, 3 years ago would have been at the height of probably the Hero League, Team League split business, and queue times were just wild. And the system does get you in a game pretty quickly, and I think it's all right. You, of course, are going to be hovering in that diamond plat area where Smurfs start to count for nothing. So it's easier for me to encourage you to get back in there and start playing. If you were, you know, silver and gold, then you might have to deal with that issue, but it's an issue everywhere under the sun. In fact, this last week I did some research into Fortnite Smurf problem because I was just curious if they had one.
And they do?
I mean, every game has a Smurf problem. Actually, what I ended up farting off was watching their various videos about how they now have Sarah Connor and Ripley in the game. And I'm just like, do kids even know who those are? Apparently they do, which is great. And I think I'm just showing my old man here, thinking that kids don't think Ripley and Sarah Connor are awesome. But they totally have them.
I feel like Fortnite's telling me I should have had kids that are old enough to play Fortnite already, because clearly they're trying to get me to play Fortnite with my kids.
Right. Or, I don't know. I have no idea. They also had Raven and Tomb Raider, Lara Croft, and then some Marvel guy I don't know showed up.
Well, yeah, Master Chief came to it, so yeah.
Oh yeah, Master Chief's in there too. Yeah,
Fortnite's just having the nerd boomer expansion at the moment.
I mean, I guess if they made the joke in Marvel movies, those old movies, Alien, then maybe Fortnite kids do watch it. I don't know. Then like my dad's sensibilities turn on. I'm like, oh my God, a 12-year-old watching Alien 1? That's not cool. That movie's scary.
Frequently cited as the first movie to scare the crap out of me, and definitely the first movie I remember watching and thinking at the time, I'm too young to be watching this. I was seven.
That was Terminator 2 for me, the playground. I was like 8 when I saw that.
I didn't see Terminator 2 until right before puberty. So I took that just fine. I just remember my parents being like, I don't remember this much cussing in this. We probably shouldn't have rented this, but.
Sure, sure.
Yeah, they didn't turn it off. So, yeah. Got to see that. Still one of my favorite action movies.
Good movies.
Yeah. Anyway, it sounds like we're getting off topic again, which means it might be time to put a bow on this.
I think so.
Yeah. Yeah. So, anyways, if you want to hear us wax philosophical about Terminator 2 and Alien, join us live at twitch.tv/amovetv, because sometimes we do a little after show business where we talk. And, well, I mean, we talk on the podcast, but we talk about things that aren't Heroes of the Storm. Of course, we do enjoy your off-topic emails as well. Sometimes we end the show with them like we did last week. So keep those coming. Don't let us keep you from sending in fun non-Heroes-related topics. And if you like what we do here, you like Into the Nexus, and you want to support it, the best way to do so is the Patreon. So go check out patreon.com/ITN. And yeah, go check it out. Get yourself some perks, access to the Discord, ad-free version of the show when we have ads. Huge thanks to our Patreon producers, by the way. Thank you, Declan H, Cheesy Bob, Chris K, and Sean B. You can catch us live Thursdays on the Twitch that I just mentioned. We're on Twitter at ITNcast. If we ever change schedules or anything like that, that's where you can find updates about that. But Kyle, where can people find you when you're not doing ITN?
You can find me over at KyleFerguson.com doing Dungeons & Dragons podcasts coming up on the end of the season for There Will Be Dungeons. You can find me over at Twitch.tv/KyleFerguson playing Heroes of the Storm in the Knights, tournament play, scrims, and of course some Storm League and replay reviews too this week. And also trying to pick Sonya, but no one, you know, it's always banned or someone else picks it. I want to learn Sonya, actually. I think Slam Build looks like a lot of fun.
It
is more up my alley than the old spinning.
It is. Spinning is lame. I've never liked spinning. It's never been my jam. Folks, you can find me on Twitter at Garrett Art. That is where I am tweeting nonsense out into the ether. Go follow me there. Everything else, this show included, can be found at amove.tv. Every podcast that I produce can be found there. It's the home for all the stuff that I do. So go check it out. Hope you enjoy this episode, everybody. That's going to do it for this one. Until next time, good luck and have fun.
Take care.